Let me just paint a little background before we begin to look at these verses. If you read Hebrews, you'll discover that there are lots of references to sacrifice and some of the features of the first five books of the Bible, the Old Testament Jewish rituals and systems. And that's primarily because the book of Hebrews was being written to Christians who came from a very strong Jewish background and who actually were at the point and in a difficult place where they were beginning to think about going back into Judaism itself. And the issue that the author of Hebrews is addressing is that there is this danger of a drift back to Judaism. And there were many different reasons for that, wrong doctrine and so on, but also the prospect of suffering, which was perhaps about to come. And if you read through Hebrews, you'll discover that some of the evidences for the Hebrew writer writing as he did was that there were things that were happening or not happening within church life. And as I read a commentary and was just getting some background on this, I was really challenged by some of these features of the life of the Christian at that time of the writing of Hebrews. And I want you just to reflect on these as we begin. The neglect of public worship. How easy do we find it today just to say, I don't think I'll bother going this morning? Weakness in prayer. Is that a feature of our church life or our own individual lives? Instability of doctrine. How sure are we about what we believe as a church fellowship, as a community of the people of God? These Christians, actually, we read in chapter 5, hadn't grown spiritually. There was an expectation that they should have been in the place of teaching others, and the writer to Hebrews is saying, actually, you're the people that still need basic food. And then there was a neglect of the scriptures. They weren't using the scriptures as they should. And I felt that quite a significant challenge for me as an individual, and the danger of drift and how that's a possibility for all of us if we are not careful, if we neglect some of the spiritual disciplines that we ought to be following as part of our Christian lives. As we come to Hebrews chapter 11, we read in the earlier part of the chapter many of the exploits in the history of the Jewish people. And the writer of the Hebrews is just trying to highlight, look, this is your history. These are the people who have stood up for faith and who have trusted in God. Don't go back to rituals. Don't go back to routines, but have faith in me. And as he lists all these people, it is an impressive list. And these people had faith, even although, logically, what God was asking them to do didn't seem reasonable. For example, Noah built a boat in the middle of a desert, and God said there was going to be a flood. How unreasonable is that? Or in verse 30, we read here that Joshua was asked to walk round the walls of Jericho, and after 7 days, the walls would collapse. How unreasonable is that? And yet these individuals proved to have a faith that conquered. A faith that was, sometimes the word faith is like one of these words that's kind of too difficult to get our head round. It's fuzzy and it's difficult. The bottom line, I think, in this was they heard God and they obeyed what he said. They weren't responsible for delivering the outcome. God was. And theirs was to be faithful and theirs was to be obedient. And so we have in the first part of Hebrews chapter 11, all these heroes of faith. And as we read down this chapter, we could be left with the impression that a conquering faith, which is our subject for this morning, or a faith that conquers, is just for a few elite Christian saints. But these verses 31 to 40 help me understand that a faith that conquers is possible for all kinds of believers. These verses teach us that faith can operate in the life of anyone who will listen to God and then will do what he says. Now, that's quite difficult because some Christians get wacky ideas. And we need to test what God is saying. And while we've got this dilemma because Noah built an ark in the middle of the desert, and somebody might come to you and say, well, I think this is what God's saying for me to do, but I think that needs to be tested. And as we do that, we listen to God, we hear what he says, and we trust him and move forward. These verses that Bruce read to us this morning from verse 31 to 35a, and I would encourage you to look at your Bible as I speak, because I really think it's important to read what is being said and to understand that. And on page 1210, you can see the verses that I'm going to be speaking from. And in verse 31 to 35a, we read about a number of people. And what really encourages me as well is that these people were not perfect saints. So a faith that conquers isn't just the preserve of perfect Christians. Verse 31, Rahab. Rahab was a prostitute, an unlikely person in the Hall of Fame. She had heard that God had delivered the Israelites from Egypt, that he had opened up the sea, that he had helped them defeat other nations around. And when her moment came, she trusted God and provided for the spies that were in the land. And then you've got Gideon, who we read about in Judges 6 to 9. He was a farmer who, when God approached him, didn't have faith right away. Remember, he put out this fleece and that fleece just to see if what God was saying would actually happen. But eventually, he trusted God and he won a victory with only 300 soldiers. God worked with him and he eventually had a faith that conquered. So there you've got Rahab and Gideon. And then Barak. How many of us have ever heard of Barak? Well, we read about him in Judges 4 and 5. At the time in which Barak lived, there was a prophetess, a lady who prophesied on behalf of God, called Deborah. And Deborah came to Barak and said, look, you have to go and fight against the armies of Sisera. And he refused. He says, I am not going unless you come with me. Now, I don't know whether he was saying, you've got to put your money where your mouth is, Deborah. If I'm going, you're going. But probably it was really a step of faith that he was saying to Deborah. He was saying, look, okay, I can't do this on my own, but as God's representative, I'm prepared to go with you and face this army. And so he put his faith in God and he trusted in God. And then another man that we see listed here is Samson. We all know about Samson from children's church, Sunday school days. The man who was very strong because he never had his hair cut. He was a religious man. He was a Nazarite. He kept the vow never to cut his hair. And yet he allowed himself to go off track and get involved with women. And his lifestyle was incompatible with the vows that he made. And we discover Samson ending up with his eyes gouged out and being shackled as a prisoner. And at the end of his life, he fought for God. He gave his life and defeated the enemy. And even Samson, despite his waywardness, is listed among the people that God counts as having faith that conquered. And so, faith that conquered isn't for an elite, it's for you and I. And faith that conquers is not just the preserve of people who are perfect. But faith that conquers is a faith that acts and carries with it personal risk. If you go back to the story of Rahab, She's in her house. She welcomes these spies. And actually, if you read James chapter 2, you'll discover that Rahab is used as one of the examples where he says, the just shall live by faith, and faith without works is dead. So Rahab, by receiving these spies, put her own life at risk and acted on the basis of what she felt God was asking her to do. This whole issue of faith not being something fuzzy or theoretical in her head, we see in the story of Rahab. She acted and put herself at risk. I think this is a massive issue for us as the people of God today. I think in our service for God, whether it's in the workplace or wherever it might be, is the challenge for us to step out in faith. We're called to live by faith. That doesn't just mean missionaries in terms of finance. It means us in our everyday life. Are we prepared to stand up in obedience to what God is saying to us, whatever that may mean? I think sometimes we're paralysed by our personal reputation and we don't take steps of faith. We're paralysed by our popularity or our pride. We may even be paralysed by fear. What will happen if I take this stand and this position? And so a faith that conquers is a faith that moves to act, even when that means perhaps personal risk. But then, as we read down in these verses, we discover that faith that conquers can really do magnificent things, can have significant achievements. We read they conquered kingdoms, they established justice, they stopped the mouths of lions, they quenched raging fire, they escaped the edge of the sword. Lots of achievements through faith. And we can identify lots of people with these things. They conquered kingdoms. David, Gideon, other leaders conquered kingdoms. They established justice. Well, David as the king ruled and administered justice and equity to all people. They stopped the mouths of lions. Well, Daniel would be the person that relates to. They quenched fire. That would be the three young men, the students who went into the fiery furnace, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they escaped the edge of the sword. That could be David again, where out of his integrity and faith in God, he refused to take Saul's life. But what interests me looking down these various achievements isn't so much what was achieved, but what it took to achieve these things. For example, Daniel, when he was faced with opposition and was challenged about being thrown into the lion's den, he refused to stop praying. That was behind his accusation, and that was behind him being thrown into the lion's den. But he stood up for God in that environment, and he refused to stop praying. So if we're looking for good definitions of faith, that's what it meant for Daniel. So we speak about the word faith, but actually, in practice, on the ground, it just meant that he was not going to compromise, and he continued to pray. Then the young men that were thrown into the fiery furnace, it says that they had faith. They had faith that conquered. They achieved things. But what was their issue? Their issue was that they were not going to worship the gods of Babylon or wherever they were. Their priority was the honour of God. And so, while the fire didn't destroy them, there was a great achievement. Actually, what they stood for was God's honour in that situation. And then David, you know, he escaped the edge of the sword time and time again. Saul threw a javelin at him or tried to kill him with his sword. And what was the issue for David in that situation? Well, he refused to kill the person that God had appointed. Time and again, he had the opportunity to get rid of Saul, the man who was trying to kill him. But he refused to take vengeance on Saul. And so when we speak about faith, for me, it comes down to lots of simple, basic things. Obedience to God. Understanding what God is saying. Standing for him in an environment that may be challenging. And I've kind of taken it even further in my thinking. And I hope Pearl doesn't smile at this, but it might even mean living with somebody with whom it's not easy to live with. It might be treating other people properly. I felt quite sad during the week. I phoned my daughter Natalie in Birmingham. And I said, what were you doing tonight? She says, I went out. I phoned a couple of Christian friends in the university because I was sitting here lonely in my room. And she was lonely partly because she gets on well with the other girls in the flat. She goes out with them sometimes. She's not isolated in that sense. But there are times when she just wants to find space for herself as a Christian and not get into all the other things that they're getting into. And I really believe that in her particular context, because she's taking a stand as a Christian, there are implications for her which can be loneliness and other things. But the call for her is to take her stand. Or it might be in the workplace with a boss who is really rude. Or you might feel discriminated against in some particular situation. It might be a health issue that God is calling you to carry, a health issue that might never be resolved, that is really very difficult. It might be, if you're in business, refusing to do dodgy deals. And I really think that this is where faith operates. And it's easy sometimes to read Hebrews chapter 11 and get a mystical idea or an idea that all of these people are saints and heroes, but that isn't me. So faith that conquers can have significant achievements, but I think it's not about the achievement, it's about what's going on in behind that. In verse 35 of Hebrews chapter 11, I believe there's a significant watershed here. Because the writer turns from all of these fantastic achievements and says, but. And there's a massive but in this chapter. Because Hebrews 11, 35b to 38, records that there are many unknown men and women of faith who did not seem humanly to succeed, who were not delivered from their difficult circumstances. And yet we read that God honours their faith. The author reminds the reader here that there are those who don't see great results through faith and in fact seem to be failures in this life. It says they were tortured to death. Others were stoned to death. Some were sawn in two. Some were slain with the sword. I want to say this morning that the absence of deliverance or the absence of trouble does not mean an absence of faith. This helps me answer the question of somebody who served God in a Muslim context in North Africa for 30 years with little or no fruit. Because the results are God's responsibility, and faith is not directly proportional to results or to fruit. And I believe that faith that conquers can be a faith that perseveres. In this passage, there's a vivid description of the indignities and the hardships which people of faith have been willing to endure. Killed with the sword. Destitute. Ill-treated, wandering in deserts and mountains, homeless, poor, ridiculed, and even killed. And for me, this verse paints a picture of a world with fierce hatred and hostility to the truth as it hunts and assaults people of faith. And yet against the world's dark background of hatred, the stature and integrity of God's faithful people shines brilliantly. The phrase that I appreciate most in Hebrews chapter 11 is this, when the writer says, these people are those of whom the world was not worthy. The world didn't know the value of some of the people that was in their midst. A bit like Jesus. People around him did not understand the value of who he was or why he had come. And the human estimate of people of faith, the estimate of the world is really low, but God's estimate is entirely different. He weighs their worth in a different kind of way. One of the great scholars of the UK, Christian scholars, F.F. Bruce, says this, God's people have been outlawed as people who are unfit for sophisticated and civilized society. The truth is that sophisticated and civilized society was unfit for them. And as I read these verses, 35b to 38, what's going on there is not just theoretical or something from the past. Last Monday, I went into work and there was an email sitting on my desk that said a man called Ravi in Bihar in India, the night before, last Sunday evening, he was brutally killed on the way home from having shown the Jesus film. When he wasn't home late at night, a search for him found his severely lacerated dead body. One hand was chopped off, and there were cuts and wounds in his neck and in other parts of his body as well. His belongings at the time of the attack were found intact, including his motorbike, his mobile phone, his watch, and his Bible. Faith that conquers, and faith that is a persevering faith, is faith that needs to be practiced by our brothers and sisters in some parts of the world today. And it raises big questions. If you read Acts chapter 12, you will discover that James was beheaded and Peter was released. Why? I can't answer that question. It rests with the sovereignty of God. We were singing, he's got the whole world in his hands. That's easy to sing sitting here in Alma. But actually, that's what we believe. And those who went to their death that were listed in Hebrews chapter 11, in their obedience, it meant that they trusted God, whatever might come. I've got a great sermon on suffering. And the whole idea of the solidarity that we need to have with those who suffer for their faith. What was it that Paul said, or Jesus said, when Paul was persecuting Christians? Paul said, who are you, Lord? Jesus said, I am Jesus whom you are persecuting. If Jesus feels that persecution, and we are his followers, and we are encouraged to always keep praying for all of the saints and to enter into the challenges that other brothers and sisters face, then we need to feel that same pain as well. And yet we do know that from God's word and from history, that even through these difficult circumstances, God is at work and God can change things. In Acts chapter 8, the gospel only spread through persecution. Saul, at the time, stood as Stephen was stoned to death, and Saul became Paul, one of the greatest missionaries that the church has ever known. And then we think about China and all those who were martyred and gave their lives, and yet today in China, there is the biggest church and the biggest revival that has ever gone on. Present-day martyrdom is no less brutal than that which went on in Hebrews chapter 11. Today, Christians are tortured and killed under both communism and Islam, and their deaths are every bit as horrendous. So faith that conquers is a faith that perseveres. And faith that conquers is a faith that looks back. These verses, as we come to the end of our talk together, verse 39 and 40, these verses would have reminded readers of Hebrews chapter 11 that those who had gone before were people who were essential to what they had now. Having passed through difficult circumstances, it was these people who handed on the faith. Had these people not suffered, had these people not been victorious, had they not trusted and obeyed God, there would have been no faith. This is a lesson for the people that he's writing to. He's saying indirectly, if you give up now, what about the next generation? And I think we need to understand that faith that conquers isn't just a private thing. It's not just for me. Maintaining the community of the faith is a responsibility that we have for each other and for generations to come. We have a responsibility to maintain the witness of the community of faith. And the faith of those who have lived before us are an example to us to emulate. And we salute the Cunninghams of Alma. We salute Alec Luff, who has gone to be with the Lord. We salute others who, through their faith, through a faith that conquered for them, we are able to be in the community of faith here at Alma. But a faith that conquers is not just one that looks back, but one that looks forward. So often we focus only in living for the moment, but a faith that conquers looks to the future. For some believers today, all that they've got to hold on to is that God knows, and there is a future for them which is far, far better. Those who had a faith that conquered looked for more than personal satisfaction. They longed to see God's purpose fulfilled on earth. For some of them, they didn't actually see that come to fruition. But God hasn't forgot them, and God will reward them for the faith that they had. We need to get a perspective of the future too, I think, as we live and as we serve. Today we live in a society that dispenses with things very, very quickly. And I think there's a challenge for us to build for the future and to see that in the future we will have the reward that we have. And so as we conclude, a faith that conquers is possible for all kinds of believers and not just for those that are perfect. A faith that conquers is a faith that acts and sometimes requires personal risk. A faith that conquers can have significant achievements, but it's possible to be a hero of faith when there is no obvious success. A faith that conquers is one that perseveres and obeys. A faith that conquers is one that looks back. And a faith that conquers is one that looks to the future when God will reward those who have been obedient and faithfully served him. I would like us to close this morning by singing that wonderful newish song, "There is a higher throne than all this world has known, where faithful ones from every tongue will one day come." And in this final point of a faith that conquers is a faith that looks forward, as we sing this song together, may we respond to the Lord and say, "We're prepared to obey and commit and serve you in whatever way you call us to." So let's stand and sing this together, after which we'll remain standing for our closing prayer and benediction. Thank you.